Hello and welcome to Multiform. Every week we get together to talk about the latest Xbox news, rumors, and the games we've been playing lately. New episodes post every Monday morning. You can email the show questions@multiformpodcast.com or follow the show on social media @multiformpod. That's Twitter and Facebook. This is episode 246. I'm your host, Tim Shelton, and I'm joined by my favorite lawyer and brother-in-law and best friend, Spencer Rain. Did I build you up enough?
Yo, what up?
I feel like this week is going to be an interesting one. It's a lot has happened.
A lot, but not a little.
Yeah, it's both. Yeah, that's a very confusing way of putting it. But before we get to all the juicy news, let's talk about what we've been playing. And Spencer, I'm going to let you go first.
Well, I finally completed my goal and finished Hogwarts Legacy this past week. Feels like a million years ago because it was literally on Sunday. So it's been like a full 7 days since I finished that game. Maybe it was Monday. I don't know. It was the very beginning of the week, but I talk about this last week though? Maybe I
you were really close last Sunday. You're like, I have like one thing left to do or something.
Oh, well, yeah, I had the I have everything done. I uninstalled it. So the reason I uninstalled it though is because I don't have the I guess I could have moved it to my Seagate like I did with Cyberpunk. Because I forgot that I did Modern Warfare 2, so I installed that, and that of course is 637 gigabytes. So I had to delete Hogwarts and then move Cyberpunk to my external drive. Mostly the reason for that was because I anticipate playing Cyberpunk again in the next few months when the DLC comes out. Whereas Hogwarts, I don't foresee myself playing that again anytime soon. So that had the went to the chopping block, and on came Modern Warfare 2. And I've played a couple missions of that. I know I'm late to the party, obviously, but it looks incredible. Like, it's one of the best looking games I've ever seen in my life. I remember I got to that Amsterdam or Copenhagen mission that everybody was like comparing to real life back in November on Reddit. I remember
oh,
that.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
Or October, November, whenever this game came out. And I was like, oh, hey, I remember this. Now I'm actually playing it. So,
which is actually a pretty boring mission.
Yeah, not very so far long. Just I started it, walked to like the bridge, and then I had to go do something else. So
I mean, more happens than that, but it's not significant.
Yeah, I didn't think it was. But yeah, so now that Hogwarts is done, I'm playing Modern Warfare 2. I do want to play, I know I was kind of ambivalent about Jedi Survivor, but I do really want to play it because it seems like it's really good and the customization looks really amazing. But I see enough people on Twitter that are like, either A, they're like, this game is really good, but I'm going to put it down until there's a patch, or some variation of that. Like, I've seen a lot of people either that I either follow on like YouTubers that I follow or just guys on Twitter, or like not sponsored tweets, but you know how you get tweets that like the tab of it's like your followed tab. And then there's the other tab where it's like stuff that the algorithm yeah. thinks you might want to see. I see a lot of tweets in there where people are like, this game is really good, but like I'm playing on PS5 or I'm playing on Series X or even PC. And they're like, but I kind of just want to wait.
Until well, apparently the PC version is absolute trash.
Yeah.
I did just get a patch, so I don't know about post-patch, but... go ahead.
Yeah, well, so I do want to play it, and I will play it. I keep seeing that kind of sentiment everywhere, so I'm kind of like, well, there's no point in me spending $70, 70 plus. Well, I guess it would be 62 because of Game Pass and EA Play, but still, I mean, there's no point in me paying $60+ for this game right now if it needs a patch, and a lot of people
I mean, that's basically needs a patch. Any AAA hey, game now, Hogwarts 30 fine. Days.
I have no problems with Hogwarts at launch. So, and it was an ambitious game. I mean, it's an open world game that is seamless. Like, you walk outside of Hogwarts and you can get on your broom and go to the other side of the map.
I'm trying to think of what other games I played day one this year that were trash. Like, Gotham Knights obviously was...
Didn't Atomic Heart have a lot of problems?
Yeah, but it was better than, like, Gotham Knights, Jedi Survivor on PC. And then we're going to talk about Redfall in a minute, but Redfall's having some issues. I don't know. The truth of the matter is, if you're a patient gamer, the nexus of you save money and you get a better game if you just wait a little while. And
yeah,
but
yeah, well, and honestly, like, really the only hesitation I have is because when I think about it is Diablo comes out in basically a month from now from when this episode comes out, like the first week of June. And I know that game is, I feel like that game is probably going to be fine when it launches because the beta was perfectly fine.
Are you planning on buying it?
Yeah, I think so. But my hesitation would be like, okay, with this whole thing is, well, if Jedi Survivor gets patched and is fine and it's like, you know, Memorial Day weekend or something, that's like, all right, well, should I just get this and push Diablo back? But then when I do that, then I'm running into Starfield in September because these games take forever. Diablo especially is probably a 100-hour game, so, or at least pretty meaty. And it took me 3 months to beat Hogwarts, so it'll probably take me 3 months to beat Jedi Survivor because it's a similar length game, I think. Similar amount of content. But so I don't know. We'll see how the next few weeks goes if they're able to push a patch out. But I'm fine really with playing Modern Warfare 2, occasionally playing Crusader Kings on PC, and then I was playing World of Warships with Gus today before he had to go to his he was doing some side work. So that's fine. I like playing those games. Plus there's lots of TV to watch and I don't have a million hours of free time anyway. So the only other interesting thing is I listed three controllers on eBay this week.
Of so your Xbox, you're underselling them. They're inbox, never opened.
Yeah, one is the Tomb Raider limited edition controller from the 2013 Tomb Raider game. And then the other two are the Chrome Series Xbox 360 controller. One's blue and one's red. From about the same time period, probably 2012, 2013, something like that, 2011 maybe. I don't know how far back.
Yeah, you and I were looking at these on eBay from recent sales and like I don't know if these are particularly rare. I guess the Tomb Raider one maybe is, but they go for like 100 to 200 or more. And we're not talking listings. We're talking like sold, like people paid $200 for Tomb Raider collector's edition, new in box, which is really interesting. It's just so weird to think that stuff that seemed new and off the shelf and like, how do I say this? Commonplace, right? Like you could walk into a Walmart and buy that controller, the chrome blue one, and now somebody pay 30, 40, 50% more than the original list. Way more than that even. Some of them are 100% more. And it's only been, what, 10 years? Maybe?
Yeah, 10 years.
Maybe 12, depending on when they came out in the 360's life cycle.
So yeah, if you are looking for those controllers, you should buy mine. It'll say it's by Rain 101, just like my gamer tag. And it has my image as the red rings of death on an Xbox 360 on eBay. So
I love how you're hawking your controllers on the podcast.
Hey, you got to do what I got to do.
Yeah, I'm just hoping you're going to give your old broken controllers to me so I can have my kids play them.
Yeah, I should. I mean, I have several 360 controllers. I don't have the only Xbox One controllers I have that I don't use. I think I have a custom one that I wouldn't give you just because it was a Christmas present and I like it a lot. I just never use it. And I think I still have the Lunar Rock one or whatever. Not Lunar Rock, Lunar Metallic, whatever it was called.
Yeah.
The one that had like the gold and...
Wasn't it a GameStop exclusive?
It might have been. I don't know. I didn't get mine at GameStop though, I don't think. Oh, maybe it was. Not. I feel like I got it at Best Buy though. Yeah, I think those are the only two that I have that I because I only have, I have the Elite 1 and 2, which I don't use the Elite 1, which is kind of funny in hindsight. The 20th anniversary and then that custom one and then the Lunar Metallic. I think those are the only ones because I traded in or sold my other ones, exchanged them towards the Elite Series 2. And honestly, like, I mean, yeah, the Starfield controller is cool, but I could probably finish out this compatibility generation with the Elite Series 2 and the 20th anniversary would be totally fine. Like I don't necessarily need anything else or want anything else, but I will say the Starfield one is cool, as is that Darth Vader one. Who knows? Maybe I'll be stupid and I'll convert my, if these controllers sell on eBay, instead of using that money towards something worthwhile, I'll buy that Darth Vader Star Wars controller from Razer.
I think it's sold out new, right? You have to get it from resellers now.
It might. That sounds right.
Because I saw a sale recently on the Boba Fett and the other ones, Mandalorian one, which the Mandalorian one is the worst design by far. Just because
it's kind of weird.
It's too boring. Like, it's
okay, here's a used listing. It's a used listing for the Darth Vader one. There's only one picture though. It's kind of annoying. New open box. Okay, so.
The other thing I was going to mention is, so they opened pre-orders for the Hyperkin Xenon, or is it Xenon? Xenon. The yeah, 360 Xenon. Brought back to life controller.
Like and Duke.
Really tempted. I've almost pulled the trigger twice. The only reason I haven't is my wife and I are trying to budget a little bit better. So.
I think they just, I'll be honest, I think it looks ugly. I think the 360 controller compared to the Xbox One controller looks ugly. Like it looks less sleek and more kind of frumpy is like the best way to describe it. Like they definitely tightened the design for Xbox One.
Well, and even the Xbox One original one, I don't think is as good as the one, the Series S X one, where actually I think it was late in the Xbox One generation when they added the headphone port. They changed the top to where it wasn't the piano black. It was the controller material, you know, and it just like swooped down. That design, I think, is what is the really good design. But my nostalgia is getting to me. If it were a wireless, I probably would have already pulled the trigger. But
yeah,
I don't need
it. About
that.
Yeah,
it's,
don't worry
it's
about
wired.
It. I don't think
so.
It's
I was
going to
use it on PC. Yeah, I know it's not either. The other thing that gives me pause is I'm worried the weight's going to be wrong. It's going to feel like paper because the battery pack isn't on the back. So it's going to feel
completely different. Did you ever use a wired Xbox 360 controller at any point?
No.
Yeah.
Did they feel like paper?
They feel really weird. I knew somebody that had one in high school and it was very weird. Plus it was weird not having the battery pack there because you could just like move
rest your finger on it.
Yeah, it was weird.
You know,
it was noticeably lighter for sure.
Nobody talks about this very often, but from a game preservation perspective, I really worry because I tend to keep my old console so I can play old games. And like we've seen PS Vitas, or not PS Vitas, what was the one before Vita? What was their handheld
PSP?
Before Vita? Yeah, PSP. PSP is now almost all PSP batteries rupture at some point. So like we'll get to a point where no PSP outside of like a controlled moisture special room, probably people that kept theirs in special places, is going to be playable probably within, you know, 10 years from now. And Vita is probably going to be close behind. PlayStation 3, 4, and 5 are the same way. Like all their controllers have in-bed batteries, which have a limited lifespan and eventually will swell and rupture and be useless. So there'll probably be a point in the future where only wired controllers will work on PS3, PS4, and PS5 unless you mod your controller to replace the battery. And I do appreciate that on Xbox, when my batteries die, I can just swap out for another rechargeable pack. And I don't know why, but I guess just because I keep my consoles, I look at that piece of it and I'm like, man, I really hate that my PS3 controllers don't hold much battery anymore. And it's never going to get better. Because even if you bought a new in-box PS3 controller, that battery is going to be old. It's going to hold its charge better than the one I have. But eventually, at some point in the future, no PS3 controllers are going to work. Or they're going to work for like 10 seconds.
Yeah.
Go pull a cell phone out of your drawer from 15 years ago and charge
it up
and see how long it lasts.
I was going to say, it's funny you mentioned that. I was cleaning out. Part of the reason why these controllers were listed is because I was cleaning out my storage closet with all my junk, we'll call it. It's not all junk, but a lot of junk. And I have all my old cell phones. And this was the first time that I realized that all of my old cell phones. So like my original Motorola Razr, my LG Envy Touch, this old Samsung phone from, I don't even, it was my
second
phone.
Most of them wouldn't turn on?
Well, no, they haven't been able to, they haven't turned on in years. Probably, I mean, at least 10 years. Maybe not quite 10 years, but this is the first time I've noticed that on a couple of them, the batteries were swollen and like a little, felt like a little sticky, you know? So I was kind of like, well,
I'd take those to Best Buy and recycle them.
Yeah, they are officially donezo. Although I pulled out my iPhone 4, first one I had, still fine. No issues there. And my iPod Touch, first gen iPod Touch from like,
that's,
you know,
old.
2010, maybe. Feels fine. No issues. The battery isn't swollen yet. So I could probably plug it in and it would work. And it would be horrifically slow, I'm sure.
But yeah, I booted up an old iPod Nano a few months ago to wipe it. And the process of wiping it took forever because I had to first get iTunes, the old program, working on a modern computer with the right drivers and crap, and then get it to recognize the device and then wipe it. And obviously it's slow because it's a, I think I have like a fifth or sixth gen iPod Nano. The funny thing is the battery on that thing has got to be toast. I don't think it holds a charge at all, because I had a car that had a hookup for iPod, and you could use it basically as a hard drive and then control all the music through the car's head unit. The car was a model year 2012. So that iPod Nano was hooked up to my car in the dash for like the whole 8 years that I drove that car. I think it was 8 years, 2012 to 2018. So it was 6 years. Had to be longer than that. Oh, I bought it in 2011. So 7 years of that, and the battery's toast. Like, because it was in a hot and cold car in the Midwest, so it got down to zero and all the way up to 100 plus in, you know, the summer. Anyway, I don't know how we got here. Let's get back to what we've been playing. Star Wars Episode One Racer is the Games with Gold for this month. We talked about that last week. I downloaded it and booted it up because I had a little time to kill. I was like, oh, I want to get my nostalgia fix. It hit me way harder than any other retro game that I've put on in a long time. It all came rushing back to me, and I was pod racing with the best of them. I've completed the whole first circuit, and I'm halfway through the second, I think. Maybe not halfway. I'm actually going to get the 1,000 out of 1,000 on the trophies, I think. There's a couple, or trophies, achievements. I think there's a couple that'll be not that challenging, but a little challenging, just because, or time consuming, maybe is the right word. But otherwise, I think it's easy. And Spencer, it feels so good. It feels so good that I remember after this game came out, when the sequel came out, I was so excited. And I remember being let down by the sequel in some way, because the original was an N64 game and the sequel was a PlayStation 2 game, I think. And I think it also might have come out, it came out on some other platforms, but it definitely did not come to Xbox. So when Star Wars Day came around, May the 4th be with you, this last week, I was watching sales and I went ahead and picked up Star Wars Episode. Actually, they changed the title. So the first one was Star Wars Episode 1 Racer, and the sequel was just Star Wars Racer Revenge. So I picked up Star Wars Racer Revenge on PS4 for $5. So I'm very excited to finish all the way through Star Wars Episode 1 Racer and then just jump straight into Star Wars Racer Revenge. And even if it's not as good, and that one, I from my memory, was not as good, the graphics will be slightly better, and it'll, again, give me a nostalgia fix.
Yeah,
the graphics are so laughable.
The graphics will be slightly better. It's like going, yeah, okay.
Like Anakin's like a triangle on a rectangle with another square for his lower waist area. It's like just a bunch of like crude polygons jumping around after he wins the race.
I'm on the Wikipedia page for Episode One Racer, and there were so many tie-in games for that, for Episode One. There was counting pinball and counting the arcade racer. There was 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 tie-in games for the Phantom Menace. 10. Compared to 3 for Episode 2 and only 1 for Episode 3. Although it's interesting, they don't consider Battlefront, either of the Battlefront games, tie-in games, which I would kind of consider them tie-in games, because Battlefront 2 came out the same day on PS2 as the DVD release of Revenge of the Sith. I only know that because my mom picked me up from school that day and had them both waiting for me in the car, and it was a very glorious day. November 2005. I remember it very, very vividly. Yeah, I'm looking.
Yeah,
it's kind of cool. It's cool. Xbox has done a really good job of putting out, like, providing these old Star Wars games to us, either with gold or on, well, mostly through gold, because, like, I have Battlefront 1 and 2. I have now Podracer. We got Jedi Starfighter. We've gotten Jedi Knight Jedi Academy.
Yeah, I actually went on Star Wars Day and clicked through a bunch of them to see how many of the retro ones that I own, mm-hmm. and I owned every single one of them.
Yeah, Lego Star Wars 2, I think they gave away at some point.
I think they've given away all the Star Wars games, Lego ones.
No, they haven't given all of them away.
I own all of them, and I know I didn't buy any of them.
Not on,
because I owned them on disc back in the day.
But not on...
Gold?
I mean, not on Xbox. Because I don't have all of them, and I would have claimed all of the... would have claimed all of the Star Wars games had they been given. But I just know that, like, yeah, Jedi Starfighter, Pod Racer, Battlefront, Battlefront 2, like I said, Jedi Academy. So I don't. Oh, and then was Republic Commando that was given away or something? Because I have that as well. I don't know.
Okay, so I'm on a list by Game Rant that I got from Google of every game given away on Games with Gold, and I'm just going to search for the word Star Wars and see how many appear. Okay, here's your list. Star Wars Force Unleashed was given away. Force Unleashed 2 was given away. Lego Star Wars The Complete Saga was given away. Lego Star Wars 3 The Clone Wars was given away. Star Wars Battlefront 2 was given away. Lego Star Wars 2 The Original Trilogy was given away. Star Wars Battlefront was given away. And that is the list. So I am correct. All three Lego Star Wars games were given away.
Oh, okay. I didn't know you meant Lego Star Wars. I thought you said, it sounded like you said all Star Wars games.
I did, and I corrected myself, but you probably didn't hear me correct myself.
Okay, I vaguely remember the Clone Wars game being given away and myself making the decision of, no, I'm not going to collect this game because I don't care.
Yeah, I mean, I've never gone back and played it because I played two out of the three when they originally came out. The weird one is I played the original Lego Star Wars and then they re-released it as The Complete Saga or whatever. And mm-hmm. I think that actually contains two different games. They combined into one, but they reworked some content.
Oh, The Complete Saga. Yeah, it's like it's the first two Lego games, but just slightly different. Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
But then the sequel, Lego Star Wars 2, is the original trilogy.
Mm-hmm.
And then the third game is Clone Wars. The Clone Wars, yeah. So it's all very confusing how they named it and how they combined it. It actually really irritates me how inconsistent they are.
Yeah, it should be. The Clone Wars should have been the second one.
Yeah. It's fine. Anyway, so I'm playing Star Wars Episode One Racer. The best part about it is the simplicity of it. Like, the game, you just go in, you select tournament, select your race, pod racer. There's upgrades and stuff, and there's a little strategy to that kind of thing, and you're boosting. It's both has a little complexity to it, but it's also super simple. There's not anything super advanced about it. You can jump right in. The races last about each lap's between 1 and 3 minutes. So it's like a 10-minute race or less. I love it. It's my game for in between other games or just to kill time. I've got it installed on both of my Xboxes. It's great. Now, along with that, I've been playing Jedi Survivor. I don't really have anything of note as far as I'm enjoying it. I'm not deep enough into the story that I really have any feedback or feelings about the story. I'm not going to spoil anything. The gameplay feels just as good as the last game. Really don't have any major complaints except for I do see from a technical standpoint, I haven't had any bugs or crashes or anything. It's worked flawlessly for me, but the game is rendering at a kind of low rendering resolution and then up sampling it using I forget the name of it, but it's not NVIDIA, it's AMD's upsampling technique. And I've watched a couple videos on the technical presentation, and the game is basically rendered at 1440p and then they upsample it to 4K, or yeah, and then the Xbox Series X in performance mode is rendered at sub 1080p. It's like 800 or 900p, and then they upsample that to 1440p, and then that gets upscaled to a 4K display. So if you're in the 60 FPS mode, it's really 900p. It's less than that, actually. It's 800 and some change p that is upsampled and then upscaled, and it looks blurry. Remember I commented last week how it looked blurry? Well, after watching the Digital Foundry video, after I made that comment, I was like, eee. And the 60 FPS mode from their testing only holds between 40 and 50 FPS in most gameplay. So I switched over to, upon their recommendation, the resolution mode, which is not called resolution mode. You just toggle the performance mode toggle on off. You have to toggle that off, which is what I'm calling the resolution mode. And that gives you roughly a 1440p image upsampled to 4K. I think it's still not great though. And I will say the general resolution of the clarity of the image is probably the biggest thing I can put a knock on. And when you move, there is a little bit of flicker around any moving objects because of the way they do the upsampling. The game looks beautiful, and I've had no hitches or crashes or anything, but the overall resolution presentation just looks a little blurry and a little weird in motion, which personally I don't really think detracts that much from the game, but I could see some people being really irritated by it. The gameplay, on the other hand, is fantastic, and I've always loved the first game, and I'm so far loving the second game. I also have my lightsaber. You get to pick two stances that you can have equipped. I'm using the staff stance and the dual lightsaber stance, where I break it into two sticks. And my lightsaber color is yellow, in case you were wondering. Because, well, I'm not going to say why, because Spencer will knock on me. So I'm going to keep playing that, obviously. I'm kind of savoring it because I don't know what the next big game I'm looking forward to is with Suicide Squad out of the crosshairs.
Starfield and... for you.
Unless no, you there's going to be something before Starfield because we'll probably get... Well, Spider-Man 2 will come in September, it rumored, and then we'll probably get Forza Horizon or Forza Motorsport before Starfield. And honestly, I'm getting a feeling that Hellblade 2 is coming this year. We're going to talk about that in a minute in the news. But okay, the last thing I played this week is I finished Forza Horizon 5 Rally Adventure. Maybe I talked about this last week. I looked at my achievements and it says I got the final achievement on 4 days ago. So that would have been after we recorded the last episode. So really liked rallying. My favorite car ended up being the Porsche rally car that you get if you unlock enough Porsche cars to be like a Porsche loyalist, and it unlocks. And I don't think it's part of the DLC. I think that was just in the base game because you have it, right, Spencer?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I really enjoy that car a lot, especially for rally racing. And also I've been unlocking some of the newer cars that they've added from the performance update, which I talked about last week. So we can move on from there. Let's talk about some news. And I'm going to call this first item a news item, I guess a bunch of news items rolled into one. But let's talk about the Redfall launch. I'm not playing the game. I uninstalled it before ever booting it up. And that is a pretty drastic step, I know it sounds like. But here's I don't even know where to position this. So reviews came out and were poor. It's getting 60s, which isn't the end-all be-all, right? I've played bad games and enjoyed at least some of them. I've played games that I had a problem with, right? I played Gotham Knights all the way through to the end, and that is a similarly rated game. The problem here comes in that this looks like a boring and buggy mess. And so reviews were not kind. Some were even 4s out of 10 from major places like IGN and GameSpot. And the gunplay and the controller feel got knocked pretty hard. Really bad bugs, really bad AI, a vacant open world with nothing to do. But what really pushed me over the edge, what really told me I cannot play this game, all that stuff I could have looked past if it was... Those are temporary things, right? You can fix a bug. Well, not all of it. You can't fix a boring open world, but you can fix bad gunplay. You can adjust the controller stick feel, the dead zone. You can fix the bugs. You can fix the frame rate. You can launch 60 FPS mode. Spencer, why did I uninstall this game?
Because, Tim, there were 17 GamerScore achievements. There are 17 GamerScore achievements for this game.
20 of the achievements on this game.
That's so
which
many.
It has like 50 total, more than 50, I think. And 20 of them are 17 points each. And anyone that cares about GamerScore, even a little bit, cares that their number not be some jumbled mess. Well, I guess some people maybe don't care about the even odds of their game, their achievement list. But I saw many people that were like-minded, such as myself, on Twitter and Reddit. And we've talked about on this show before about how much I hate games like No Man's Sky that have three-point achievements, no. Seven, no. 17, no. So now the only way to play Redfall and not have my gamer score messed up with a weird number on the end of it is to get exactly 5, 10, 15, or 20 of those 17-point achievements. If you get one less or one more than those four numbers, you end up with a wonky number. So you either got 100% the game, or you got to make sure you only get a certain amount of 17 point achievements. And I just don't want to mess with it. I don't know why it matters to me. I know it's a level of OCD I shouldn't care about. I know it shouldn't stop me from playing a good game. But when you layer on performance issues, bugs, boring game, weird controller feel, bad gameplay, and worst of all, a setting that I really was not super interested in. If you remember, originally I was like, vampire game, cartoony aesthetic. I'm not really into that. But then I saw some gameplay and I said, okay, the gameplay looks fun.
Yeah.
Well, now you're saying the gameplay isn't fun, which was the only thing pulling me past the fact that this is a vampire game with kind of cartoony art style. So now you got a knock on what I had used to overlook a previous knock. It's depressing. And of course, this brought up all the feelings people have about Xbox and the lack of first party games and the lack of AAA 10 out of 10, 9 out of 10 type games from Xbox and fears for Starfield. It got messy. And Phil Spencer did an interview. We'll talk about that in a few minutes. I want to stop here, Spencer, and I want to hear about your feelings about this, the reviews for this game, and the status of everything, and the achievements, all of it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we talked about it a few weeks ago when they first announced that it was going to be 30 FPS at launch and not 60. And that kind of should have been the first red flag or the canary in the coal mine that there were some issues here, because they had already launched physical copies of the game where it said 60 FPS and they had to put stickers on them saying not at launch. And there were store listings where it was listed as having 60 FPS that they had to change. I was like you. I was kind of like, okay, it's a vampire game. I'm a little less interested, but it looks kind of cool. You know, the gameplay to me looked neat because the guns looked cool. They looked like I've talked about on the show before, like I prefer when games have realistic looking weapons and guns. Like I hate the guns in Fallout 4, for example, or The Outer Worlds because they look like toys or they don't look real. So I saw that in Redfall. I was like, okay, these look kind of cool. The setting looks kind of interesting. And then we learned, you know, okay, the story is going to be like some scientists created these vampires. I was like, okay, that's kind of cool. Like I like that more than just like supernatural vampires showed up. So there was, you know, there was a few things that had me interested in it, but yeah, it was like the first red flag should have been, it's only going to be 30 FPS for an FPS game, a first person shooter game, to not be 60 frames in this day and age is pretty tough. I mean, and to be a flagship first party title, which is what this game was being treated as, we'll talk about it. Or I guess we can talk about it now because it's not necessarily related to the Phil Spencer interview, but this was their one more thing game at E3 2022. So this was the game that they thought last year was the biggest, best, you know, the best game for them to show and to finish, you know, to be the zinger at the end of the show. Like, don't forget about Xbox, or you have this to look forward to, this game. And yet it had been delayed to 2023 by that point, I think. And so, you know, how bad was this game back then too? That's something else to think about. But, to me, it's like they marketed this game heavily. A lot of those previews a month or two ago where I was like, okay, I'm kind of coming around to this. This looks kind of interesting. We're in 60 frames, but they knew, and Phil admitted that they knew this game was not going to be 60 frames at launch when they were doing those previews at 60 frames. He said as much in the interview, or he said basically that those words that they knew, even then. So I think the marketing for this game has been misleading from that perspective. I think it's been misleading from the other angle. Like I said, that Xbox was treating this like a major, major game. I just don't understand how you could launch a game in this poor of a state. And it's not just the technical stuff like you're talking about, Tim. Like, it's across the board. The gameplay is boring. The story is shallow. There aren't real cutscenes. I've watched some stuff where the cutscenes are vignettes. They're vignettes, like almost like comic book style vignettes. Whereas, you know, some of the marketing, it was made, there was less 3D kind of, higher quality, videos in the previews and the trailers. That did not end up being the case in the actual game. So
you know what bothers me most about some of this stuff? You talk about the marketing, right? They truly did give this a level of marketing like something like Halo Infinite would get. Like just an absolutely inescapable amount of marketing. This thing was in every Xbox thing. It was in their email, it was in their social. Like there are other games that they've had released that did not get as much marketing as Redfall got. Minecraft Legends did not get as much marketing as Redfall got. I think Minecraft Legends is probably a stronger game. Okay, it is a stronger game because at least whether you like the gameplay execution or not, it didn't have crippling bugs. It didn't have frame rate issues. It didn't have a boring world. So what I feel weird about is Xbox is becoming synonymous with AA games almost, or games that are smaller or have a niche audience that don't appeal to a broad subsection, like Grounded and Hi-Fi Rush and
even Hellblade, I would consider.
Well,
that.
Hellblade, but at least that is like a visual showpiece, right? Like that will
true. Pentiment, will, another one. Good
yeah,
game, but like
Pentiment.
Not gonna move boxes.
A bunch of these are good games, like Hi-Fi Rush, really great game. Pentiment, great game. Grounded seems to be pretty popular with a certain type of gamer. But you're going up against Nintendo and Sony, who put out 9 out of 10 games that appeal to a much broader audience. And it's okay for Xbox to do these types of games. I like that they do these types of games. Like Hi-Fi Rush and Pentiment are awesome. I'm glad that they exist. But they need to exist alongside a Halo that is a AAA, like 9 out of 10 game, and a Gears and a bunch of other franchises that don't exist or haven't come out yet. That
alleged games like Fable and Avowed and Perfect Dark.
If all of those were a 9 out of 10 game, but they need one of those to come out every year. And if every year you're only coming out with the smaller stuff, like even Minecraft Legends that just came out, feels like a smaller side game. It feels like something that was built with needing to keep a content pipeline filled. And it's sad. Here's the other thing, Spencer. This is another thing that blows my mind. Redfall. They would not shut up about it for years. They have had it in the same breath as Starfield. It clearly is not that level. And obviously, you got to use marketing to sell what you got. You shouldn't have released it like this, but you got to use your marketing how best you can to get your stuff to sell. But Hi-Fi Rush was stealth dropped. And then after it came out, it got a little bit of marketing, but nothing ever gets as much after as it gets before. So Hi-Fi Rush, which is a 9 out of 10 game, but is somewhat niche, just because it's a rhythm game. I think they tried to make it more accessible, but I think it intimidates people because it's a rhythm game and it's art style. But it never is getting as much attention as Redfall. Whereas I wonder in a world where Hi-Fi Rush had a preview cycle, what the narrative about the game would have been. Like, would people have written it off because it was a rhythm game? Would people have written it off because of its art style? Or would it have had the buzz and anticipation as a marquee title? And I think the mistake here is that, and we're going to start to bleed more and more into Phil's interview, I don't think Xbox had a ton to do with Redfall. And they even said as much, that basically they didn't get involved trying to help the team with the resources of Xbox until very late in the process. Whereas Starfield, they got involved much earlier. And Hi-Fi Rush is probably a similar situation where I heard them say in an interview, they let Hi-Fi Rush, they wanted to stealth drop it. And they told them, go ahead, do it.
Yeah.
Maybe you should have put the hammer down and said, no, we're going to try something new, or not try something new. We're going to tout this because it's awesome, instead of doing a sales drop, because as much fun as that is, Xbox needs the good press, to be honest.
Yeah. What I was going to say about one of the things you mentioned is, if you're going to have a year where you have smaller games like Hi-Fi Rush and the Minecraft spinoffs, then you're not having your major AAA games if you, when you do have them, like say a year like this year, fortunately, you know, spinning it the most positive way possible, you still have Starfield, which probably is going to be a good game. You know, God forbid where we'll be in September if Starfield is a disaster like this. I just don't think it will. I don't think Todd Howard would launch a disastrous game.
Not to mention, even if it is, they'll throw every resource under the sun at it.
Well, sure. But yeah, he'll launch a buggy game, but he won't launch a game that has all these other problems that Redfall has. I just can't see it. It's been 25 years since BGS had a bad game. So, but anyways, if you're going to have a year where there's few and far between major releases, and they considered, like you said, they considered Redfall a tentpole game. They marketed it as such. They talked about it as such. They can't be duds, you know? That's the Xbox's problem right now is, yeah, they're launching small games. They're launching, like you said, niche titles like Pentiment that are really good. I loved Pentiment. Very good game. But they just can't nail AAA games. They haven't been able to. I mean, it's been a problem for 10 years. It's been a problem since the Xbox One generation. Yes, there have been some good games here and there. But I was just scrolling through my achievement list, and literally none of these games are console exclusives. You know, like I'm looking, let me just look
through here.
Yeah, because
they stopped locking down third-party deals once Phil Spencer took charge.
Okay, Forza Horizon 5.
And the first party was never able to deliver. Okay, well,
Forza's been the only good game, consistently good franchise for 10 years now. But, I mean, MLB The Show, Hogwarts Legacy, Crusader Kings, Hot Wheels. I mean, High on Life, that's another niche game, though. I know it's an exclusive, but niche.
Oh, I forgot it was an exclusive.
Lego Star Wars The Skywalker Saga, SnowRunner, Red Dead Redemption.
Now you're Witcher. Just reading your achievement list.
That's right. I know. I'm just going through it. Plague Tale Requiem, Deathloop was a year late, Cyberpunk, there's Pentiment, Mass Effect Legendary Edition, that doesn't count.
I do think they've been really hurt by the fact that it's taking a really long time to get all the studios they acquired to push out the games they already had publishing deals for, to get them working on something new, and then to know that it's going to be 4 to 5 years for something new. So like Psychonauts 2 came out last year, and now how many years until we're going to get another game from that studio? Same thing with Outer Worlds, although there's been releasing multiple games.
Well, and Avalanche, right? Or who makes Wasteland?
Wasteland 3, yeah.
I mean, that was a good game. Technically, you could say,
but it was published third party.
Game. Right, true. Yeah. You could play it on PlayStation, but that's a good game.
But what I mean is they had to get it out so that they could start working on whatever's next, which will be probably an exclusive.
Yeah, but I guess my point is that none of these games that I've played in the last, we'll say, other than Forza is the only game that I would fight for. I could live without Pentiment.
I'm a huge fan of Gears 5. I think it was really fine. Good.
I mean, it was.
I loved it.
It was better than four, which I didn't think four was that good. So, but it was good. But I mean, the thing is, though, like it was completely forgettable. I mean, maybe it wasn't for you or other people, but to me, it's like it didn't hit the same as Gears 3 did to me. Again, it was better than four. All right, whatever. But
I mean, I was really impressed, but I agree. It doesn't seem like for some reason the Gears franchise has ever latched on to like sell consoles or anything.
Yeah. So that's to me.
I mean, it's a mess. I don't think anyone in the community doesn't think it's a mess right now.
I guess we can talk about the interview and more specifically the stuff that he kind of.
Yeah. So Phil Spencer did an interview that was scheduled long before Redfall came out and in its current state and before the deal with the CMA in the UK broke up, blocked the Activision acquisition last week. So he went through with the interview, which was with Kind of Funny XCast, which is Kind of Funny Games Xbox podcast, episode 137, if you want to go look it up. He looked beaten on this call. He looked frustrated. He acknowledged several times like he's not having a good couple weeks. He acknowledged that he wasn't feeling particularly upbeat about what had been going on, but he answered their questions. But some of his comments have been fairly controversial. One of the things he said was they lost the worst generation to lose because it was when people built out their digital libraries. being the PS4 and Xbox One generation. I was watching a video by Benji Sales. Spencer, do you know Benji Sales? He's on Twitter and YouTube.
The name sounds familiar, but I'm not that familiar now.
So he's basically just a regular guy that does industry analysis on Twitter and YouTube. And what's interesting about what he said is he said that there's some pretty solid proof that that isn't the case, because the Nintendo Switch didn't launch until 2017, and nobody had digital libraries on Nintendo's consoles, and the only reason people buy that platform is games. And Phil also said, in addition to losing the worst generation to lose, that there isn't a world where if they just constantly put out 9 out of 10, 10 out of 10 games, that people flock to their console and it shifts the market share in a dramatic way. And a lot of people take umbrage with that. And to be honest, I do. I think if they were pumping out narrative, unmissable experiences like Sony has been the last few years, like God of War, Last of Us Part II, Death Stranding, Spider-Man, Ghost of Tsushima, I don't even know what else I'm missing in there. Even Gran Turismo was well received, but that's not a narrative experience.
Spider-Man.
Yeah, Spider-Man. I said that one.
I'm always thinking about Spider-Man and how much I want a PS4 or 5 to play it.
Yeah, one, I told you can play it on PC now. You could probably run it on that laptop you got for me. The only one that wasn't like super like over the top successful was that motorcycle game. I forget the name of.
Oh, anyway, Days Gone.
Days Gone, yeah. Which to me still looks really fun, and I intend to play it at some point, but my point being, if Xbox had those kinds of experiences, I do think it would shift the landscape. But you have to do it at a interval that makes your platform attractive. Because Xbox is doing a lot of other stuff right. Like the industrial design of the console, great. The accessories and stuff that's available on the console, from the Elite controller to Design Lab to the accessibility controller, all fantastic. Support for the ecosystem, right? Being able to stream additional games on the cloud or your PC, or having a combined subscription. So software offerings like subscriptions and hardware, I think they're killing it. It's a more powerful than the PlayStation 5. It's a smaller box than a PS5.
It looks cool.
All that stuff they're doing right. Said. What?
It looks cooler, like you said.
In my opinion, that's
subjective. No, I agree with you. Too. Yeah, I know.
But I think the PS5 is kind of a gaudy, like, big towering mess that I just hide under my TV. But I don't really care what the box looks like. It just plays my games. It just sits under my TV. Okay, but back to this. The games is the only thing they can't get right, and they keep stumbling over themselves. Like, remember how bad Crackdown 3 was? Yeah. Like at launch, it's kind of, it's a boring open world. The multiplayer cloud infrastructure you promised doesn't really work the way you said it did.
Even Quantum Break wasn't a must-play experience.
Yeah, and that one's third-party exclusive, so I'll cut them a little slack there, but that was a better game than a lot of
you can
of
make
the
same argument with Redfall right now. Is like, Arkane is a first-party studio, in quotes, but according to Phil, they aren't integrated at all yet. So
yeah, and this game was
in a third party exclusive, and it was under development before.
Yeah, long before they came to Xbox, which is fine, you know, fair. But you started trotting them out as a first party game, like that's the disconnect, and you can't wipe your hands and be proud of it at the same time. So let's see. Spencer, do you agree with his statement that they lost the worst generation to lose? Because I don't, and so I'm curious if you do.
I agree with the statement in that, yes, it's true, losing the the PS4 Xbox One generation was probably the worst one to lose because of what he said. Like, people were building their digital libraries and they don't necessarily want to move. However, I disagree at the end when he says, so we're just not even, to me, his tone sounded like we're just not even going to try to fight back. Like, I'm pretty sure he said, even if Starfield's an 11 out of 10, it's not going to matter, in so many words. And I agree with you in that seems like garbage to me, because like you said, the Switch came out halfway through the last generation and it gave the PS4 a run for its money, it's giving the PS5 a run for its money. So
when there's enough buzz about a game, it really can be one game. Well,
and that,
like,
exactly.
If Starfield was an 11 out of 10, some PlayStation people that don't own one would get a Series X.
And people were losing their minds about Zelda Breath of the Wild and was it Super Mario Galaxy? Or not Super Mario Galaxy. Whatever the Mario game was that came out, Odyssey, that came out in 2017, 2018, that was alongside Breath of the Wild. People were losing their minds about both of those games. They were getting 10s everywhere. You know, the discussion of whether they deserve those 10s is a different day. But the point is, people were loving them and they moved boxes. Now,
or they bought a second box.
Yeah. And
the problem is Xbox is co-releasing on PC. So if you have a PC, you don't need
a second box. Yeah, but not everybody has that because not everybody wants to spend $1,500 to be able to run Starfield as well as they'd be able to run it on an X Series X or Forza Horizon 5 for a game that's already out that we know is good. But the other problem, I guess, with Switch 2 is you have the added bonus of it being portable. But still, I think if, like you said, if Xbox was churning out Spider-Man, God of War, Horizon, a Horizon sequel, I mean, Days Gone was rough when it launched, but by, you know, like a lot of games nowadays, it was rough at launch, but then after a few months, it was patched out and it was great. I mean, if you're launching those games every quarter that PlayStation is doing, I mean, yes, Nintendo probably has a little bit more lag time between their major titles than Sony does, but they're still putting them out. Then you're not going to catch up, but that's not the point. You're going to sell more. I just think, yeah, that I think is a losing thing to say. I also think their priorities are out of whack a little bit. Focusing on cloud and Game Pass more than it seems like making AAA exclusives, making these big tentpole games, and not being able to produce enough Series X's. And also, and we've talked about this before, this is kind of stupid, but, and this is like the lowest tier of their issues, but I still think the naming schemes could have been a lot better.
I don't know why it sounds stupid,
but there are plenty of people. When the Series X went up for pre-order, the One X shot through the roof because plenty of people were like, oh, that's the new Xbox. Let me order it. And there's plenty of people out there that I'm sure have either been confused by the naming structure or were just like, well, this is the PS5. It's clearly the best one, so I'm just going to get that. I don't know which one of these Xboxes is the best one. Because I mean, there's plenty of people out there that they have a very baseline understanding of technology and video games and consoles where they're like, oh, PS4, PS5. Okay, the 5 is clearly better. Just like any other thing.
They walk into Best Buy and say,
number.
Give me an Xbox, and they expect to be given the newest one.
Yeah, and the guys look, well, we've got... I mean, if they're a good salesman, you know, they push into the Series X, but if the Series X is never in stock, like the dudes at Meijer told you last week, they get one a month.
It was actually Best Buy.
Or Best Buy, they get one a month. They're going to be like, well, we've got these.
Yeah, so I went to a Best Buy to buy a TV for my wife. I think, did I talk about this?
Yeah,
last
you talked
week?
About this last week on this show. That's why
I
mentioned it.
Yeah, they had every console except for Series X, and they said they only get one. Actually, they had gotten six that week, and it was the first time they'd gotten more than one or two in months.
Yeah, so, it's just insane to me. I don't understand how Microsoft, one of the like three biggest companies on the planet, can't get that supply chain organized. To where they could make
well,
Series X.
They were ahead for a long time. Like you could find Xbox and you couldn't find PS5. And then PlayStation worked through all their issues to where now they're pumping out PS5s like crazy. And something is happening behind the scenes with Xbox and they're not talking about it. And I really want to know. I feel like they should be forced to talk about it because the problem with Microsoft from a information standpoint is Xbox is such a small percentage of their total revenue. It's a significant contributor, but like
it's not PlayStation is to Sony, not even close.
Yeah, like when an Xbox is having supply chain issues, that somehow isn't big enough to hit their quarterly earnings like call because they have such bigger things that drive such bigger revenue. And I'm sure, you know, they probably are even losing sales on money on some consoles, so they care more about Game Pass and things like that. But the other thing going against Xbox's favor is subscription service growth is slowing across multiple industries because we're in a recession and gaming is a discretionary purchase that is already going to be hurt as we edge closer and closer to recession. I'm not sure if a recession will happen or not. I'm not an economist, but I do know that inflation is out of control and that everything I buy is more expensive, which makes it harder for me to buy things that I want to buy. Hence why I'm questioning whether I want to spend $50 on a retro controller that I don't need. Whereas in the past, I probably would have bought it and just stuck it on a shelf, but I don't need it. So anyway, yeah, I know we're all feeling that.
The last thing I wanted to say is just the Bethesda angle on it and how they basically, Phil was like, well, we, you know, Phil, myself, Matt Booty, like, we really had nothing to do with this game because Arkane and Bethesda aren't really integrated yet. And I know it takes time. I know mergers and acquisitions are very difficult things to do, and there's lots of levels to it, and team compatibility is a real thing. But it's been 2 years. This game was in development for several years before the acquisition. I just don't see how even Bethesda, when Arkane, I mean, Prey was a good game. Dishonored, I didn't play Dishonored, but those, I know people love Dishonored 1 and 2.
Yeah, that's a different team, though. This was the Prey team.
You're right. But still, Prey was a good game. People liked Prey. I thought it was fine. I mean, I didn't beat it, but I was like, this is fine. Like, this is not a bad game. Certainly not a bad game. I don't know. I don't get how this happens, how they let this out. It must have just been a case of crap or get off the pot, because it had been in development for so long. I saw somewhere where it had been in development as long as Starfield, which is insane because that game's been longer. In development. Okay, so going nearly 10 years.
Insane. Yeah, this was in development when they were finishing up on Fallout 4 and Fallout 76, and this was still early development, I believe, is what.
Well,
they
right, yeah, they want to do the whole games as a service route with this game, and that was kind of a shift.
Yeah,
but
also,
to me, it's like if you spend $7.5 billion, it's time to be hands on. It doesn't have to be Phil Spencer, but like Xbox needs to have people there in the room checking these games and having a hand in their development, and you know, giving the final go ahead that these are ready to be shipped. Because there have been plenty of bad or forgettable first party games, but I mean, I feel like this is the low point. Like, this is the low point. I mean, we've been told for like 3 years now that this is going to be the year of Xbox, and then it keeps getting delayed, keeps getting pushed back, and then finally we start getting a few things here and there, and this game that was supposed to be the tentpole for the first half of the year was a complete disaster and one of the lowest rated Xbox games.
I can't believe
years.
Just to bring it back to the most frustrating thing in all this. So they're going to patch this and they're going to stay with it. And who knows, maybe it'll be a redemption story where
it gets
patched up to a 7.
But the story and the gameplay aren't there. That's the problem.
Yeah. Well, which that's why I was about to say it gets patched up from a 6 out of 10 to a 7.5 out of 10, you know, a slightly enjoyable experience, but still not a tentpole game. But what really irks me is they're part of Xbox. And I know that the Xbox platform team and the people that work on achievements know how much the achievement community hates odd numbered achievements. Nobody warned them. They went through certification, thought this was a great idea. They are like, oh, we want to try something different. Nobody does this anymore. Nobody was like, yeah, well, it's because we find that we get lower engagement on trueachievements.com and it drives away a certain type of player. And those are the players that tend to talk to their friends about how awesome a game is. Like, honestly, you shot yourself in the foot with word of mouth and a whole bunch of other things. The only way I'm probably going to play this now is either with a guide where I specifically plan out my achievements so that I don't accidentally get too many of the 17-point ones, which is going to be a nightmare, or I'm going to play it on one of my other profiles in my family, like my wife's profile, and then she can just have the odd achievement because she doesn't actually do achievements. So then I can play the game a little bit without ruining my gamer score. But how stupid is that? I mean, I'm the stupid one because I care. I get that. But I'm their player and I'm not alone. There's a huge segment of the audience that feels this way. Achievements is like core to the ecosystem. And it's just you're part of Xbox now. Somebody at Xbox should have picked up a phone and been like, hey, this is a bad idea.
Yeah, I mean, the last comment is this just puts even more pressure on Starfield when it already had insane amounts of pressure because of just the struggles of the last couple of years for Xbox, and kind of the disappointment, to be honest.
Yeah. Well, that segues perfectly. So let's talk about the next thing is this week they announced the official time and details for the June showcase. So I'll read a little bit from their blog here. We're delighted to announce the Xbox Game Showcase will be live streamed on June 11th at 10 a.m. Pacific time, local time zone below. Immediately after Showcase, we'll be airing Starfield Direct, a deep dive into Bethesda Game Studios' highly anticipated sci-fi RPG. Join us for some new surprises and first looks from our incredibly talented internal studios and our many creative partners around the world. This is the day gamers have been waiting for to see what is coming to Xbox, PC, and Game Pass. Starfield Direct will invite you inside Bethesda Game Studios to learn much, much more about Starfield with tons of new gameplay, developer interviews, and behind-the-scenes insider information. So I put a list of first-party games that are announced up on our show notes because I'm going to run down this. I'm going to read it really fast, and then we can talk about because I think we're likely to see Starfield, Forza Motorsport, and maybe Hellblade 2 this year. There's some things I keep seeing in the news that make me think Hellblade 2 is closer than we think. But I think they're keeping it as a surprise and keeping things closer to the vest, which they tend to do these days. So we have 343 Industries, nothing new, still working on Halo Infinite. Alpha Dog, working on Mighty Doom, nothing new. Arcane, Redfall, / unknown otherwise for their other studio. Bethesda Game Studios, Starfield, Coalition, Gears 6, rumored Gears of War Collection. Compulsion Games, don't know what they're working on. Double Fine, don't know what they're working on. Id Software, don't know what they're working on. The Initiative, Perfect Dark, really far out. In Exile, working on a RPG, we don't know anything else. Machine Games, Indiana Jones, really far out.
Oh.
Mojang, Minecraft Legends, just released. Ninja Theory, the aforementioned Hellblade 2, and then also something called Project Mara, or Mara, that seems really far out. Obsidian Entertainment, Avowed, and The Outer Worlds 2. This one seems the closest of the stuff that not coming this year, but maybe next year. Yeah, sorry, I'm kind of... Let me run down the rest, and then we'll talk about it. Fable, From Playground, Rare, Everwild, Roundhouse Studios, unknown. They worked on Redfall in a support capacity, so that might be all they're doing. Tango Gameworks, Ghostwire Tokyo just came out. Turn 10, Forza Motorsport, coming this year. Undead Lab, State of Decay 3, World's Edge. They just released Age of Empires 4, and they're working on a console port of it. And then they've also announced Age of Mythology Retold, which is cool. And then from the publishing division, we have Contraband and Ara History Untold. I forgot about that one. And then ZeniMax Online is working on all the continually never-stopping Elder Scrolls Online expansions. So there were four studios we didn't know what they're working on. Five, if you include one that worked as a support studio on another game. Now, what were you going to say?
I was going to say, I think we definitely see either Avowed or Fable. And one of those is coming out within the next 12 months.
I think we're going to see Avowed next year. I think Fable's a lot farther out than we think it is. I think they prematurely announced it.
You think, between Fable, Perfect Dark.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm thinking Perfect Dark.
Oh, Perfect Dark we're never seeing. The game's never coming out.
Well, I mean, they built a whole studio around it.
I'll be dead when that game comes out.
The question is, when Perfect Dark comes out, Perfect Dark needs to be, when it comes out again, it needs to be God of War, Uncharted, The Last of Us level of game. It needs to be a narrative powerhouse. It needs to be gameplay. It needs to maybe be a third person or first person shooter with perfect gameplay. If it just comes out and is a sequel to the previous Perfect Dark, kind of modernized, it's going to go over like a fart. Nobody's going to care. So I hope they're completely reworking that, a la God of War, to make it an entirely new thing. Otherwise, like I said, it's going to go over like a fart.
Yeah.
Also, State of Decay. State of Decay is super popular, but it's another example of a game that is only popular with a segment of the audience, mm-hmm. and it's never going to be a system seller.
until it is. I mean, if they can make it, if they can make it,
I guess
that's another franchise where you could change it up and make it have wider appeal, like something like Days Gone, more of a single player.
If you add narrative into it and make less like the permadeath mechanic and the base building, and
I feel like we see more of this is what I'll tell you: Contraband, Forza Motorsport, Avowed, definitely, I still think we might see something from either Fable or The Outer Worlds too, maybe not. And Indiana Jones. That was the other one I was going to say. Between Indiana Jones, Fable, and Perfect Dark, which one of those three comes out first? And would we see anything about it this year? I will
say, we see Indiana Jones before we see Perfect Dark, which just sounds ludicrous. But
I trust Machine Games more than the unknown of the initiative and then the people from Crystal Dynamics or whoever. I forget.
Here's the thing, though. Between Avowed, The Outer Worlds 2, and Fable, I think we're only going to see one of those.
I think... yeah, you're probably okay. This is what I'll say. You're probably right. We won't see The Outer Worlds 2. Fable, we didn't see. I mean, we didn't see anything either of those games last year. So you're probably
right.
Which
is good. Don't talk to me until but, it's within 12 months.
But if they're smart, but they're not, and if they worked with other companies, which they won't, well, it's coming out in June 30th, the new Indiana Jones movie. June 30th, Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny, which actually looks good. I will be seeing it the opening night because I love Indiana Jones. It looks a lot better than Crystal Skull. If they're smart, they'd figure out a way to say, hey, we're making a video game that's Indiana Jones. There's a movie coming out that's Indiana Jones. Probably the last one. Certainly probably the last one with Harrison Ford. I don't know.
You reminded me of something else when you said what's coming out in June that I had forgotten about. And then when you actually told me what it was and it was something different, I forgot what I originally thought. You reminded me of something that was like, oh, yeah.
Not Batman, The Flash. That comes out in June.
Talking about it was it's video game related. It's something that is being remade that's coming out this year that they announced. Oh, it's Fallout 4 next gen update, which we're definitely going to hear about that in June.
How do you remember that?
Well, because you're like, what's coming out in June? I thought you were where I thought you were going was to say that they were going to have Obsidian make another Fallout New Vegas.
No, In Exile is working on In Exile is working on the Fallout remaster. That's what they're doing.
Well, you're making jokes because
the Fallout 1 and 2 remaster for modern consoles.
They're going to announce something new from one of these four studios. We don't know what they're working on. The fear is that it's another AA. Like,
I wonder, what do you think's more likely? We get a Marcus Fenix collection or a Fallout New Vegas /3 remaster or re-release on modern consoles.
I don't think they're doing anything more with any of the Fallout 3, 4 New Vegas games except for the Fallout 4 next gen version.
I think you're right because I think Bethesda is way too...
Well, it would be another studio.
No, I know. Yes, they're too busy, but I think they're too. I think Todd Howard is way too protective of Fallout and Elder Scrolls. Though I don't think we will. Which is stupid. Again, I don't understand why Phil Spencer and his cabal don't just say, "Listen, Todd, we respect you. We know you're the greatest artist of our lifetimes. Your games are incredible. We worship at your feet." We paid you $1 billion, you specifically of the 7.5. We get all that. But for the health of Xbox, we need to give Fallout to other people. And maybe we need to give Elder Scrolls to other people. And we need to release either remasters of 3 or New Vegas. Maybe, like I said, in Exile, you could port Fallout 1 and 2 somehow. I mean, Wasteland is a very similar game. I mean, original people from Fallout, from Interplay.
I mean, 76 was done by a different studio.
Yeah, but it was still Bethesda Game Studios, Austin or whatever. But I'm saying, like, it's got to be, like, they saw what happened when Obsidian made Fallout New Vegas and their feelings got a little hurt when everybody was like, that's the best Fallout game and Bethesda Game Studios had really nothing to do with it. And I think ever since then, they've been like, well, we just won't get this game out again, even though it's literally the most... I mean, if you were to put all of the... in quotes, Xbox first party IP on the table, Halo, and then after Halo, probably Fallout and Elder Scrolls. being the most consequential, I would say.
They honestly, if they wanted to, this would be an easy win from a, like, I don't think there would be blowback on this, but they really need to follow up on the Halo story and announce a sequel or major expansion DLC. But it feels like at this point, they spent so much time patching onto Halo Infinite. Like, I just want more Halo story. And I feel like it's going to be forever until we get that, because they're still trying to dig themselves out of a hole with their live service plan for Halo Infinite. Well, let's move on. Okay, number three. So they released the next round of, they paused, I think it was in November, they paused experiments on the Xbox dashboard. No, maybe it wasn't that long ago. I think it was a month ago. Yeah, it was a month ago. And so now they've done a bunch of experiments, and they've come back with answers to feedback they got from the community. So they released to the insider group a new dashboard preview, and they have three new things that this one brings to the forefront. I'll read you those three bullet points. Number one, provides easy navigation to your library, the Microsoft Store, Xbox Game Pass, search, and settings at the top of the home screen by introducing a new quick access menu. I didn't notice this on the first time I booted it, but now that I know it's there, it's super helpful to have that little quick access there. Number two, simplify the layout by making more space so you can see your background by reducing the size of some of the tiles and moving them to the bottom of the screen. I really like this because now the tiles only take up about 35-40% of the screen. And now you see 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. You see your 9 most recent activities, whereas I think it was only 5 or 6 before. So like, if you switch games a lot and use a lot of different apps like I do, because I'm on Disney Plus, then I'm on Netflix, then I'm on HBO, then I'm on Jedi Survivor, then I'm on Star Wars Racer, then I'm on Forza Horizon 5. That's 6 things that I'll do in a given 2-day period, and I'll switch between them. So keeping them all right there on the home screen is great. And then number three, as a responsive game art feature to update the default background and show off the beautiful art associated with each title when you hover over the titles. So if you remember before, the first title, the most recent game that you had launched, if you didn't have a background set and you just had it set as default or like one of the Xbox default options, whenever you had a game as your most recent thing on the old dashboard, it would make that your wallpaper. Well, now they have that, but it's dynamic. So as you scroll across those 9 items, it'll do a custom wallpaper for and design art for whatever thing you have highlighted. You can disable this by doing a custom background or lots of other things. But I currently am using this, and I think it's pretty great. There is quite a bit of change to the, like, if you scroll down, now there's like all kinds of like featured sections, like new Game Pass games and new all kinds of just content to like surface stuff that's come to the store. I do think this is an improvement over what we have now, but I still feel like the PlayStation and the Xbox UI suck. I don't know why. I just feel like this home screen, I don't know. It doesn't wow me.
I mean, it looks and sounds really cool. Obviously, I'm not an insider anymore, so I don't have it. Do we know when?
Do you see the picture I dropped in the show notes?
Yeah, okay. No, this looks cool. I mean, it looks, I'm always down for changes to the well, let's call it the dashboard. I know we talked about it. I feel like we talked about this last week, how we're all kind of tired of the current dashboard because it feels like it's been the same for a million years. So I'm always down for this type of innovation. So it does look cool.
They also said they're experimenting, and this part isn't fully baked in, but the My Games and Apps button at the bottom left, apparently now the images that appear on that are like dynamic, and it'll like draw attention if you have like updates required or something, like somehow it'll tell you about that. So I'm interested to see how they implement that in the future, but seems like a solid step forward. I do like that you can see the wallpaper art now. The previous one, I think about 60 or 70% of the screen were covered by tiles, and your background was basically invisible.
That's actually a good point. Yeah, I do notice that. That is kind of nice. I used
And that was the biggest feature like feedback that they got.
I used the Fallout 25th anniversary thing, the power armor guy.
I used that one for months, and now I'm using the new one that just came out. Jedi Survivor has one, although it's not that exciting, to be honest.
Yeah,
but they also added a what do you call it? Ghostwire Tokyo just added one, and Redfall just added one. So if you want to spec out Redfall on your dynamic wallpaper, they have the wallpaper for you. Number four, Seagate expansion cards got a permanent price drop. So the little sales that have been going on were actually a price drop that has now been officially announced. So the 512 gigabyte expansion card. Now, these are the expansion cards that go into the back of the Xbox that, through a special slot, that operate the same as the internal drive. So you can play Series X games, Series S games directly from this drive. It's not the same as a USB external SSD or hard drive. These are the expansion cards that allow you to play same as the internal SSD. So the 512, so half a terabyte, is $89.99, $90. It was previously $140, so they dropped the price on that $50. The 1 terabyte is $149.99, was previously $220. So they dropped the price on that one, $70. And the 2 terabyte was originally, or sorry, it's now $279.99, so $280. It was previously $400. It was more $100 more than a Series S. So it got a $120 price drop. I own the 1 terabyte one because I have a lot of games installed, and it was I could not live without it. And I paid the $220, so it's dropped $70 since I bought it. I only wish that the 2 terabyte had existed when I bought mine, because I probably would have preferred that. But I will say, at $279, that is still absolutely insane for that hard drive. This is the one mistake I think Xbox made on the hardware design. On a PS5, it has an SSD slot for an M.2 drive. You can get a 2 terabyte M.2 SSD with the same read-write speeds as the internal drives on these consoles for sub-$150. I think I saw one on sale the other day for $120, and less than $200.
The one that I ordered one about a month ago, or I guess 2 months ago, and it was like $35 for a 500.
That one's slower though. That wouldn't work.
Yeah, I know, but still,
it's a lot slower. Like, that one is a PCI Gen 3 drive that caps out at 3,000 megatransfers per second, or not megatransfers, megabits per second. I don't know the nerd term. I'm not that nerdy. But the ones in our systems are over 7,000. So you got to buy a Gen 4.
Okay, double the price.
Yeah, a little more than that. But yeah, it's about 100 to 150 for one that's fast enough. But still, compare that to 280 for an Xbox 2 terabyte. And it's just absolutely ridiculous. And that's after the price drop, which was much needed. But supposedly there's more options coming, so those are supposed to be cheaper than these, so we'll see if that actually helps drive down prices.
Yeah, I would never, I'm never buying a 200, even a $280 expansion drive. Maybe the 150, but
if I were you or Gus, the $90 one or the 150 one would be the ones I would go for.
Yeah, no, for sure.
I tend to, what I do is I put my multiplayer games on the internal, because I don't usually take those with me anywhere. And then I put all my story games on the expansion card, and then I can just take it out of the back of my Xbox and I travel with it. And then I can slide it into my Series S on the go, and all my games are there, since I'm not usually playing multiplayer games on traveling because the Wi-Fi or whatever is usually bad. So, okay. Next up, Game Pass additions and subtractions for May. So Ravenlock was added as a day one game on May 4th. Weird West is being added. Actually, it's Weird West Definitive Edition on May 8th. The Shadowrun Trilogy is coming to Game Pass PC only on May 9th. And Fuga Melodies of Steel 2 coming May 11th. Leaving Game Pass on May 15th. Before we leave, never heard of that. Danganronpa 2, Goodbye Despair Anniversary Edition. Hearts of Iron 4 for PC. Her Story for PC. And Yumuragi Generation Special Edition. So nothing too significant there.
Hearts of Iron 4 PC. I wonder if that's a deal ending and then they'll redo the deal. Because I thought Xbox and Paradox were pretty tight-knit.
Yeah, I thought they had some deal that like all their games were coming to Game Pass now.
Yeah, I know. That's interesting. It must be, like I said, maybe it's a deal ending and then something's going to re-up it and it'll be back in a couple weeks.
Yep. Oh, but by the way, did you see that what's that Remedy game you were mentioning? Quantum Break. It left Game Pass a few weeks ago and people were all like, what's going on? It was a licensing deal. Apparently they had some trouble licensing something and they had to re-up the license. So it's already back on Game Pass.
Interesting.
So I wonder what that is, because you still can't buy Metal Gear Solid 2 and 3 on the backwards compatible storefront on any console because they couldn't get a license re-up on historical footage that was used in the game that they didn't have a perpetual license for. So they're waiting for that to get re-upped, and who knows what labyrinth of licensing deals they're trying to unwind on a PS2 era Metal Gear Solid game. And then the final news story for the week is Star Wars, Disney, but not Star Wars. Marvel Midnight Suns is coming to last gen consoles, Xbox One and PS4. They announced the date May 11th. So that's coming up in the next few days. And then they canceled the Switch version, which a lot of stuff doesn't run on Switch without huge compromises. So not terribly surprised. You know what's weird? A lot of games launch with a Switch version, and I'm sure all these companies do the math to be like, okay, it's going to take a lot of extra work to make this run on Switch. Is it worth it for how many sales we think we'll get? And I wonder what the actual sales are of non-Nintendo published games on Switch. Like, the numbers have to be small. Despite the install base being huge, there's just too many things that go against your favor. Like, the games are more expensive there. The hard drives and space on the Switch are smaller, so it's not very good for digital games. Like, there's just a lot of stuff that goes against you. And if you own multiple consoles, you'd rather get it on PlayStation or Xbox, so, or PC. So I don't know. I just wonder if that even mattered.
If I owned a Switch, it would be for
the Nintendo machine
games. That's it. Just like if I had a PlayStation 5, it would be for Spider-Man, Miles Morales, and
Horizon. So good.
Maybe, but probably not. I really just want a PS4 Pro so I can play Spider-Man and Miles Morales. Although maybe I should check it out on PC. See if I can run.
Yeah, supposedly
use my Xbox controller to play Spider-Man.
The Spider-Man PS4, the port of regular Spider-Man is supposed to be really good. It's on Steam.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I think it's full price though, because it's only been out like 6 months or something, maybe a year. Yeah, let's find out how much it is. Store
$59.99. Oh, Miles Morales is on here too.
Yep, they came pretty close together, I believe.
Overwhelmingly positive. All right, let's see.
You should look at the minimum specs. I wonder if it would run on that that laptop at low settings. But it's supposedly a really good PC port. Like, it has a really good graphic interface. I seem to remember Digital Foundry using it as an example of what a good PC port is.
Intel Core i3 4160 3.6 gigahertz or AMD equivalent, 8 gigs of RAM, NVIDIA GTX 950 or AMD Radeon RX 470.
That 950. So it says 950
is the minimum. Yeah, GTX 950. Yeah.
So you have a 960 mobile in that laptop, which sounds better, but it might be worse because it's mobile. I don't know. It's close.
Sounds like it's not worth it.
No, it would probably be a very blurry experience. You'd probably be running it at 720p. You definitely have enough CPU. You have enough RAM, but that GPU is kind of old. It's a shame, though.
I want to play this game.
I don't know why. Like, you don't even need a PS4 Pro. Like, I would just get any PS4 you could get your hands on. Miles Morales came out as a PS5 game, and I played it on PS4, and it was great. I mean, it's definitely not as bad as Redfall on current gen, so you have that going for you.
Let's see. PS4.
Yeah, used console market is absolutely insane right now anyway.
Oh, okay. I can get this cool Darth Vader one from GameStop.
Console?
Yeah, Darth Vader PS4.
Did they do a Darth Vader PS4?
I don't know if it's it's only $209.
Somebody
bucks.
Mod it.
Refurbished. 500 gigabyte.
Okay, we'll talk about this after we wrap the show. Thanks for listening, everyone. That's all this week. I'm Tim Shelton. You can follow me on Twitter at Tim Shelton, and you really should, because I'm full of average tweets.
And I am Spencer Rain. You can follow me on Twitter at Makes It Rain.
We'll see you next week.
New episodes post every Monday morning at 10 a.m. Eastern. You can contact us on Twitter at MultiformPod or by email at questions@multiformpodcast.com. If you enjoyed our show and you're feeling extra generous, please share it with your friends or on social media. You can subscribe on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, or anywhere you listen.